This podcast brought to you by AOL. Now hiring designers in Silicon Valley, New York City, and the Washington, D.C. area. Help us set the standard for what happens next on the web. Send your resume to uijobs@aim.com today.
Boxes and Arrows is always looking for new thinking from the brightest minds in user experience design. At the IA Summit, we sat down with Derek Featherstone from Further Ahead.
I'm Christina Woodkey of Boxes and Arrows, and I'm sitting here talking with Derek Featherstone. I don't even know the name of your company.
My company is called Further Ahead.
Further Ahead. I like that very much. So, Derek, you're here talking to folks about accessibility. From what I hear, your workshop was fairly well attended, pretty crowded in there. So tell me, what is it about IA and accessibility? What do they? I wouldn't have guessed they had a lot to do with each other.
Yeah, I think for me, the way I see it is that they're both related because they're both part of overall user experience. And a lot of people look at accessibility as this little thing that's on its own, but if you do accessibility on its own and treat it as its own component, it becomes like a second-class citizen, and so it's not integrated into everything else that we're doing. And when you treat it as something that's just kind of like the checklist, right? That's what everybody thinks of when they think accessibility is these checklists of things that we need to do. It really becomes something that is removed from the overall design process and the build process and understanding it as part of user experience and how people actually use the web. Hmm.
What are some of the bad consequences of having it outside of the design consequences, outside the design process? Sorry.
Well, I think the biggest problem that I've seen is that it just gets addressed too late in the process. So I'll have clients sometimes come to me 2 weeks before they're ready to launch a site, and they know it needs to be accessible. And then I'll go through and I'll do an assessment of it. We'll do user testing with it, and we'll go back and say, you know, there's a lot of things that need to be fixed. Let's make this happen. And the site either can't go live, or it goes live with you know, a lot of accessibility issues in it. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the most significant problem, is that it gets dealt with too late, and then it costs money because you have to go back and retrofit. Mm-hmm. And retrofitting a site is never fun, and it can be a lengthy process, especially depending on how far along you are and how complicated your framework is, what you're doing on the back end in terms of code. You might not be able to change things as easily as if you'd dealt with it up front and had it, you know, had accessibility taken into account at the prototype stage. So that's the number one issue, I think, is that it becomes an afterthought, and then it's seen as this bolt-on that, you know, you just end up with an inaccessible product because of it.
So it's an old adage of measure twice and cut once?
Yeah, or measure three or four times and then cut once.
Okay. So what happens to those sites where accessibility problems go live? What happens when you aren't as careful as you should be?
Well, I mean, you really, you know, depending on who you are, you kind of hope and pray that you don't run into any issues where people, you know, in Canada, for example, we have sites that, you know, may have accessibility problems that are federal government sites, and people will launch, you know, actions. They'll bring that to, say, our Canadian Human Rights Commission. Mm. And they will, you know, say there's this service that's offered online that I can't access because it's, you know, it's fundamentally inaccessible. There's all these issues with it. So that works its way up the food chain through a process to get resolved. So that's certainly one of the dangers in Canada. In, you know, here in the States, it's a little bit different. Although, you know, very similar, it's not a human rights commission, but ultimately Section 508 here in the States is there to guarantee or at least provide for a minimum of accessibility. And so I'm not sure if people launch complaints with the government or if it's more dealt with in a civil manner, as we see all kinds of suits these days against companies in Texas and the National Federation of the Blind launching their suit against Target, and I think the one in Texas was Oracle. All this legislation exists, and if you're not accessible, then you've got, you know, you kind of get caught with your pants down.
So lawsuits and government action is a stick. Is there a carrot as well to encourage people to think about accessibility? I've heard some people talk about like good code and good accessibility mean good search engine results. Can you give us some advantages?
Yeah, I think that certainly is one of the advantages. There is a danger, though, in that being the motivation for it. And I think the biggest carrot is that, you know, we are doing this to help people with disabilities use the web. I see the web as, and I think a lot of people see the web as, this great tool to level the playing field. Having the ability to be, you know, somebody that's, say, blind or is say, confined to a wheelchair, they have the ability to shop online just like anybody else can. It is an attempt, or hopefully a mechanism, to get that level playing field, and it unfortunately that's not reality. So, you know, the biggest carrot for me is knowing that people with disabilities can actually use the web the way it was intended to be used. And I know that one of the things that I've always done that's worked really well is for people that want, that don't necessarily know about accessibility or don't know, you know, some of the advantages of it, just doing user testing with them or having them observe user testing of some of the frustrations of using, you know, even their own websites, getting business owners and people that are driving groups, the owners of websites, to see it for themselves and to hear it for themselves really makes a big difference. So that's the carrot that I like to use, although there are definitely, you know, benefits from a search engine optimization perspective. The foundation of accessibility really is that structured semantic underlying data, and that's kind of the same, you know, that's the same for search engine optimization. So the two of those fit really nicely together. You know, there's other things too, like lightweight pages makes it easier to download, things like that. So those are all these extra side benefits that may help people that want to browse on a mobile device. But I don't see those as being those might be like 10 carat, and people with disabilities is like a 24 carat. That's
24 carat carrot.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. So, well, luckily you have all those carrots, because I've noticed that business are not always as altruistic as we might want them to be.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's something where, you know, I'm fortunate in that all the clients that I have and that I work with, I've never really had anybody that I've had to sell it to them and use those other carrots, especially when I'm developing sites and building sites. This is just the way we do it now. I don't think I could even make an inaccessible website. You know, I mean, this is the way that we build sites now. And that's just how it is. There's nothing to really sell in a lot of ways. So
you mentioned that you have more work than you can actually possibly do right now, and that you know, you've been doing this for a while. Do you think that there's an increased awareness of the value of accessibility? Do you think more people are worried about it or caring about it than in the past?
Yeah, I think some of the visibility of some of these lawsuits is having an impact. I think there is more awareness of it in general. And I think a lot of people, you know, there's kind of a web standards movement among developers that just kind of keeps growing. And so there's a group of people that are just out there that are just doing this because it's the right way to do things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is kind of it's this grassroots movement that is helping to spread that vision of accessibility into organizations all over the place. So I think it's definitely, people are definitely more aware of it these days.
So earlier mentioned lightweight pages. Are there some other sort of core precepts of accessibility that you could share?
The absolute biggest one is structure. Having that structure there enables assistive devices to understand a little bit more about what the page actually is.
And what do you mean by structure?
Just, you know, structuring your page so that you have, you
the HTML,
use, yeah,
the, okay.
Yeah, so using the right HTML for the job. Mm-hmm. So having headings, lists, block quotes, using, you know, what the age-old sins of HTML was, we want to indent our text, so we're going to wrap it all in a block quote, or maybe two or three block quotes to bring both of the margins in. We just don't do that anymore, because block quote actually has meaning, and there is a certain semantic to it. A screen reader will announce that a block quote is a quote. Mm. So if we have three nested block quotes together to indent something on a page, it just doesn't make any sense, and that's extra noise for a screen reader. Mm-hmm. That's just one example. We want to make sure that we're using the tools that, even though HTML isn't an overly semantically rich language, we want to use what we do have to its best. So using lists properly, unordered lists and ordered lists, using tables properly, using headings, block quotes, all these different elements that we have for the right reasons.
So are there other ways to make pages a little more accessible?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've been pushing a lot of people to do, or to at least consider, is to think of it from an interaction perspective. You know, and one of the ways to do that is looking at the visual languages that we create with our designs. We use color and we use iconography and we use things like rhythm and flow and, you know, similarity in size, similarity in color. We use all that visual display to convey meaning to people that can see. So how can we take that and translate that into something that is useful for a screen reader? So if we're talking about things being the same size and having the same sort of weight, then we should do that same thing in the underlying HTML. So just taking that extra step to think about what you're trying to visually communicate and thinking about ways to communicate that in other ways to people that may not be able to see. Another example is, you know, we might have sections of a page where we'll have primary navigation across the top and secondary navigation down the side. We can visually see that based on the position on the page, these links are different from those links. And so there are other ways to try and convey that. You might include, say, before your secondary navigation, you might include a hidden heading that says, in this section, so that you can distinguish from the primary navigation links from the secondary, just so that it makes it a little bit more clear as to what all these different components are. So taking that visual, translating into something that's meaningful in some other way to somebody that's consuming a page through auditory means.
So with the penetration of broadband to a much wider audience, we're seeing a lot more use of Flash and Ajax and streaming video. What sort of opportunities or challenges are you seeing these days?
It's interesting because there's a lot of belief that, well, because we now have this broadband penetration, we can do whatever we want. One of the main issues that I've seen with that is the use of Flash, and I think Flash is great. I think it's got some great uses on the web. But one of the things that happens is Flash developers don't necessarily know all the accessibility features that are built into Flash. It's not really well known, but Flash has, in some ways, better accessibility support than technologies like using things like Ajax.
Wow.
That's been there for some time. I mean, you know, Macromedia, now Adobe, with Flash, they've been putting a lot of time and effort into making that accessible. And they've got, right now, at this point, they've got better programmatic control over talking to, say, screen readers, and through that accessibility architecture that's built into operating systems, there's better support there for things that, for rich internet applications than there are in Ajax right now. So that's one of the big things is, you know, with the proliferation of Flash, people don't even necessarily know that it can be made accessible. The old story was, well, it's Flash, so it can't be accessible. But that's, you know, that's not true. There's a lot of things in Flash that can be made accessible, and the principles are pretty similar to what we have in HTML. You need to enable keyboard access. So all your buttons that you have in a Flash movie to, say with your online video, like things at YouTube or Google Video or wherever, all your buttons that you use to control, they need to have the ability to take the keyboard focus so that you can tab through them. You also need to label them so that they don't just get announced as button by a screen reader, because button, if you have five things that are all announced as button, it's not clear what it is.
Button, who's got the button?
Exactly. So that's a big challenge right now is encouraging other people. There are some really brilliant people working on Flash accessibility, but it's just not proliferating. It needs we need to continue to get that word out that you can make Flash accessible.
Mm. Well, you know, Ajax is the flavor of the week, mm-hmm. and you know, Flickr flipped completely out from Flash to Ajax, and mm-hmm. we're seeing a lot of other new Web 2.0 items in Ajax. What should people be thinking about is, you know, as you sit down to knock out the next most amazing project ever.
That's a good question. I mean, in terms of accessibility, mm-hmm. I know I've said this a lot now, but the underlying structure is almost everything. That gives you your framework. So having good, solid HTML, which most people that are building new applications are these days, mm-hmm. Really what they need to do to take it to that next level is think of the interaction and think of that Ajax component as that final enhancement rather than the first enhancement. And a lot of people think about it, they start creating a new application, and the very first thing they do is say, okay, this is going to be Ajax driven. If we can avoid people thinking that way, let's think of the core structure first. What are we actually trying to do in terms of our interaction? And then how do we enhance what we've already got with Ajax?
Now, that does sound like information architecture and interaction design to me very much.
Exactly. And you know, the biggest thing that people don't ask is, should we even be using Ajax for this in the first place?
Hmm.
And that question just doesn't get asked enough. You know, there's lots of examples out there where there's really...
I'm
not even thinking of any applications in particular, but there are situations where the assumption has been we need Ajax to do this, but all these things that are happening in this Web 2.0 sphere that are all around tagging and social interaction and social networking, we don't need Ajax for any of that.
Hmm.
Those ideas are really just concepts. It's nothing to do with the technology.
Hmm.
We can use Ajax to make those... concepts come to fruition in a much more usable manner, and in some ways it's almost more accessible to use some Ajax type techniques, because the fact that the page doesn't refresh means we don't lose all that context and have to wait for that page to reload. So it's quite possible that using Ajax to expand the nodes of a tree in a file view, for example, might actually be more accessible because it's easier to maintain context. People don't have to go through that refresh. So there's a lot of interesting things to think about that we've only really just started exploring.
Okay. So let's say, you know, I am that little company, let's say I've built it. I didn't think about accessibility. What should I be looking for just to see if I'm going to be in deep trouble with the law? Is there any quick way I can go through and see if I've got big trouble or little trouble?
There are online checkers that can do sort of a quick and dirty analysis for you. The biggest problem with it right now is that a lot of accessibility, even though there is a checklist, to reliably mechanically and check for those things in an automated way, you can maybe hit 25% to 30% of the issues. So you do need to do a bit of a manual review. One of the things that you can do, though, is, and I do this all the time, is go out to the local college or university and get people from the Center for Students with Disabilities and just get them to, you know, they'll be more than happy usually to volunteer to test things out for you.
Talk to your
just
users?
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? It's unbelievable. I mean, who would have thought?
You're a radical thinker.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, this is fantastic. Thank you so much, Derek. Any last words to folks thinking about accessibility out there?
Just, you know, the main thing is just keep thinking about it, because that's what we need, is we need more people thinking about it all the time. So
write good code and think about your users out there.
Exactly.
Sounds like good no matter what you're working in.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Derek.
Thank you.